Webinar with Adam R. This episode of 3PNR is featured on the UnX Network. Welcome to 3PNR. I'm your host, Adam R., and with me on this episode is Tony Civilelli. How you doing, Tony?
Good, Adam. Thank you. How are you?
Good. Thank you for being on. I appreciate your time.
My pleasure. I appreciate it.
So to begin with, well, I usually dive in. What got you to the point of this? What got you into paranormal research?
And what I say is all my opinion when I talk about some of the different things we'll go over this evening, but my own humble opinion. But when I was 7 years old, but 7 years old, I went to sleep one night and I literally just closed my eyes and what felt like maybe 3 seconds that went by, I opened them and my mother comes walking in the room. It was a school night and she said, "Come on, let's go. You're late. You got to get going to school." And I told her, I just closed my eyes. She said, "Oh, you know, you just had a good night's sleep." And then she cracked the curtains a bit. And I remember this and I'm thinking, wow, it doesn't look anything like it did just a few seconds ago. So that kind of stood in the back of my mind. And the reason why is it made me think, even at that young of an age, that there was something different about time that I personally didn't understand. And I asked some questions about it and they couldn't give me a proper answer. And I just knew something was going on with how we, you know, people understand we call time. And as time went on, nothing else happened that I can remember that was that unusual. And then I remember in the seventh grade, I had this independent reading class. It was junior high, actually. And I took out the book, Chariots of the Gods, from Eric Van Doniken. And I read it and I had to take some notes and I had to give a quick, repeat of it to the teacher at that time. And I remember thinking, wow, this is really intriguing. And I thought, I asked him, I said, "Why doesn't anybody talk about any of this?" And he says, because we've been taught, history is different than what you just read. And he asked me what I thought about it. And I thought, if this is actually real, I mean, this is like, very, very important stuff. After that, I kept an interest in it. Things like the usual sci-fi shows, Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea, Star Trek, all those different things, Lost in Space. I would go back and forth watching them. And then started running a business, a fitness center. I was also a personal trainer. And this is as I got into my adult life. And somebody handed me the book, Embraced by the Light. And that's where it really started taking off. It was about a lady by the name of Betty Eady. And she had what was called a near-death experience. And part of what really hit home for me is when she was talking about when she had passed from this realm of existence, for a bit of time, she had been taken by some type of a spiritual being or an entity, a guide. And she was taken through different realms of existence that went through space, outer space. And she was introduced to different planets and different people that were on planets that were kind of in a similar situation as we are, but only much more advanced. And that rang a bell and got me reconnected to the Chariots of the Gods book, what Eric Van Doniken talked about, all the different type of architectural structures on Earth, how there are many pyramids, all the different things that were all over, and how there must have been some type of transmigration going on from someone, because nobody was sailing the continents back then, and yet they had similar type of structures and different types of meanings. They all had references to different types of beings, gods, plural there. As he would say, gods with a small G, and he had a lot of questions in it. What if, what if? So from there, I kept this type of interest going, and I started reading a few books here and there. And then the alien autopsy came on, and we all remember that on the Fox network. And I remember watching that, and I wasn't quite sure, what to think of it. I thought, well, maybe this is possible. But what really intrigued me was the sincerity. I think I'm a pretty good judge of character most of the time, but the sincerity of the witnesses that came forward, people like Frankie Rowe, Jesse Marcel Jr., etc. And they just seemed like they knew something had happened. It was totally out of the ordinary. It was, the alleged extraterrestrial spacecraft that crashed in Roswell, New Mexico in 1947. So I started reading more about that particular incident, got pretty versed on it. started looking at other documentaries, different things like that. Other books became kind of a reading frenzy. And then I started going to different places. I visited what we call Area 51 or Groom Lake. I saw an intriguing thing that took place when I went out there. I went out to the white mailbox. I was out there with a couple of friends, and it was an evening time that was there. It was late, and all of a sudden, the night skies lit up, and they had these war games going on. And these, you know, jets were really loud, and there was a lot of smoke in the area. But then I was the one that caught off to the side. There was this glimmering little light, and it was like in a mountain area, and it would be on and then it would be off, but it would be like, you know, miles away, and it would be on again real quick, then off again real quick. And something, in my opinion, was being tested that was probably, again, my opinion, maybe back engineered technology from elsewhere. And I went to Roswell, New Mexico, and met up with Walter Hout, who printed the article of Roswell Army Air Force Base captures flying saucer. And I went to the museum, met different lectors in that there then. And Hout told me not only did he write the article, but at that time he never came out and said that he had seen bodies, but he had mentioned that to me. He was pretty forward about it and talked to me briefly about it. And he seemed so sincere. And then I had met some other people that weren't even renowned or known that about the incident, that never had any press, just local people that were without question knew that something, and what they had talked about, something had happened. Again, back to the UFO conferences and things like that, probably over 15 or 20 of them I went to during the course of, from 1996 to 2008 or so. Started putting all this together, taking notes, met all kinds of people, contactees, abductees, military people, naval people, interviews, phone interviews. Put together a book that came out in 2011. It was titled Ambassadors to the Stars, and it was a little bit about all of the people that I've met, some of the things that had gone in my life. Then I got into my own, you know, areas of philosophical reasoning of what was going on with UFOs, and, similar to Klaus that you had on a few weeks ago, very interesting man, definitely knows what's going on, knows. I came to the conclusion that a lot of people think, well, what's behind UFOs? There's no one answer to this. I mean, you've got things from, you know, government back engineered technologies, possibly from what we would call extraterrestrial craft, just top secret projects that are 50 years, maybe plus, ahead of their time. You've got things like potentially other dimensional energies coming in here. And in our dimension, they have to use some sort of transportation. So that could be UFOs. You've got the idea of time travel, which always stood in the back of my mind because of what happened when I was a youngster, and that short version where I just closed my eyes and opened them again, and it was all of a sudden it was there. So I thought, heck, you know, all these abductions and things you read about, they can happen in the daytime where it's called missing time. Why couldn't happen to somebody at nighttime? I'm not saying that's what happened to me at all, but something did happen that was strange. And so I definitely have always been open to the idea, Adam, of time travel. And that means anybody maybe from the future that can go into the past, or maybe past civilizations, like you had talked about on that previous show I just mentioned. I'm a firm believer there's been several past civilizations, and some of them have had to survive maybe underground, under the oceans, along with ETs that were advanced as well. Maybe some of them went off planet, et cetera. And so all those things I talked about, you know, my theories and philosophy on it in the book, and put that together. But I also got into the idea of learning how to expand consciousness. And I had seen on the, the Nightline TV show about remote viewers. And I remember watching that and thinking to myself, well, who would have thought that, you know, that, the military would be looking into things like paranormal and parapsychology. So that got me all into the, you know, studying of the whole idea of remote viewing. And that took place in the early 1970s. And that was an incident that had several physicists, Russell Targ, Hal Puthoff, and others, and they got a hold of a psychic on the East Coast named Ingo Swann. Swann was an artist, but he also was a self-taught psychic and a very gifted one, a true one at that. And they brought him out from the East Coast to the West Coast, and together they worked on some series of protocols and phases that went through the subconscious mind to the conscious mind from pen to paper, and they produced psychic-like results, and they called this remote viewing. Well, remote viewing was just a name, really, and the military actually, or actually Stanford Research Institute, was a think tank for various corporations, and one was the military, and the intelligence community got wind of that. And this is how I studied this before I actually took courses and stuff. But when they got wind of that, you know, they got a hold of them and said, you know what, we've been doing something like this ourselves a little bit on the side. We've had some different people working on it, but they asked the group out of SRI, the scientists, if they would like a exploratory grant. And again, this was in the early 70s, and the scientists said, yes, we would. So at that time, they gave them a grant for quite a bit of money, which was at that time. And what they did, the group out of SRI, is they went out, got a few other scientists that had interest in the paranormal and parapsychology, brought them on board, went out and got several other different psychics, a few of them, and they started tweaking these remote viewing procedures. And Ingo Swann was the one that was really heading as far as the training of it, but the scientists were the ones that were doing all the paperwork, you know, references, documentary, all that different type of stuff. And after a few short months, the results were still pretty intriguing to the military. So the military says, they meet them up with again, say, you know what, we think, you know, this is still very interesting to us. And so they told them, you know, they said, do you think you could teach some of our people this, which you call remote viewing? And the team out of SRI was up for that. And they said, yeah, we do. So what they did is they brought on board about six different people that had had some training with the military that they thought, after going through several others and some interviews, and they brought them out to Stanford. And they were under the training of Ingo Swann. And they had produced some pretty darn good results. And this went back and forth because the military opened up another area, or actually they expanded it out at Fort Meade, Maryland on the East Coast. And this went back and forth, really, Adam, for about 20 years, maybe plus. It went under different names such as Project Gandola Wish, Project Grill Flame, Project Center Lane, Project Stargate. And the era of Psi Spies was born, and there was quite a bit of money put into the program. Well, in the early 90s, some of that started to leak out into the general populace, and the History Channel got wind of that. And they approached a group out of SRI and said, you know what, we find this fascinating. We'd like to do a documentary on it. And the military didn't deny it because they felt at the time that it would be a little bit more trouble than it was worth to, you know, keep denying, because something was already kind of out. So they said, as long as they had a say in how this was put together, they were okay with this documentary coming out. So the History Channel sent out a gentleman by the name of, I think it was James Schnabel. And he, yes, he was a tech advisor for the History Channel, and also a journalist, an author, and a science writer. And he started interviewing some of the people that were involved in the program. He found out the Russians, even some people in Canada, they may have been involved with this type of thing even longer than the United States. And so he gets pretty fascinated by it. So he starts writing a book about it on the side, and a documentary came out. It was in 1993, and it was titled The Real X-Files. Coincidentally, that was the same year the TV series The X-Files came out. And after that, it was out of the bag. So after that, the military had a backup plan. You know, they were ahead of the time with what was going on with this. And so they hired an outside third party to come in and take a look at everything. And they came back and told them, oh, we don't think it's really worth, you know, the resources you're putting into this program. We would just advise you just close it down now. So they officially closed the program down roughly in about 95 or so, late 94.
When they're shutting that down, that's them saying they're shutting it down. That doesn't mean it did.
You got it, buddy. Right. You got it. Yep. And maybe it was officially, but just different areas, different locations, things like that probably took place, in my opinion about it. And so that documentary came out. And after that, I had seen it. And I actually didn't see it when it first came out. I saw it when it was on a History Channel, you know, when it was a repeat. And that was shortly after I saw the Nightline show. And I remember watching it and thinking to myself again, well, this is pretty fascinating. The military, again, is working with psychics and psychic phenomena. It's the second time I've seen something pretty strong. And I said, there's got to be something to this. And then when they started talking about when they really looked at these targets, some of these targets were very,
more sophisticated, secrets, a little bit more, I say parallel to the normal, right? So here's,
they were above top secret type things, things like underground missile silos.
Well, yeah, I mean, listen,
biological weapons depots, nuclear
if you told
submarines,
our government,
things like that.
If you told our government, we could provide you some way to see what the enemy's doing, unbeknownst to them. It doesn't matter if you're a psychic, if you could teleport, they don't care. They're willing to experiment. Whatever it takes to have the edge, they're going to go that way.
You're absolutely right.
And part of the reason they would deny these things and call them crazy, it's the same thing for anything else. Like Area 51, for an example. They don't want people seeing what we got. I mean, I don't fully agree with people going there to try to see it, because we need some kind of mystery. Because if we knew everything, our enemies would know everything. It's not a stalemate. They would know how to counter us or even attack us, right?
So I totally agree. I try to be very objective about this all, and very
well, you're definitely a student. I mean, that's a great thing. I say this a lot. I prefer to speak to the student over the expert. The expert he's complacent, he's good at he's learned what he's learned, he's an expert at that. But a student is going to dig and dig and dig, and that's what I think you've done. You've digged a lot, man. I mean, hearing you speak, you're very knowledgeable on a lot of these things I'm not even aware of yet, right? And
well,
back to when you were a kid and you had that missing time, understand that the human brain is still currently the most complex object in our known universe still.
Oh, well, that key word is our known universe. But right. Yes, I mean, you hear it. I hear it all the time. Only we only use 15% or 20% or 10%. No question about it. If we used anything more, trust me, Adam, we would be alien to the next person.
Well, yeah, we wouldn't, for one, if we used the full potential of our brain, we wouldn't be able to be in our bodies. We wouldn't be able to be in our body. We couldn't contain that sort of energy.
We would just be multidimensional constantly. Right. Yeah, there's no question.
So
yeah.
I say this to a lot of people. When you look at a cosmic web and the construct of that, and then you look at a complex brain and think, it looks like there's an architect behind it all, right? And there's a source. Often people reference, like, well, what do you think about God? I think there's an architect of
right.
some sort.
And I'd like to get in a little bit more about that after I just give a little bit more of my history as far as my training. Real quick here. As I learned all of that about the remote viewing, I then bought the book that Schnabel, or I went to find the book that Schnabel wrote after I saw that on the Nightline show. And I couldn't find it, but I came across the second book by Professor Courtney Brown out of the Farsight Institute out of Atlanta, Georgia, where he has put together remote viewing programs. And it was called Cosmic Voyage. And I looked at it, and it was about Brown and one other former military remote viewer. And they used the tool of remote viewing to look at the idea of extraterrestrials, UFOs, and potentially extraterrestrials coming here. And when I had that book in my hand, I said, well, this is exactly what I'm looking for. So I bought that book. So I read it, and it was interesting, very interesting. The first part was about the training and some of the people involved. The second part was the bulk of the book was between Professor Brown and the military remote viewer, and they used the tool to look at the idea of the extraterrestrials visiting here, and they came to the conclusion there was not one but several races that were coming here and had been doing so for some time, and that their agendas were varied. And then at the end of the book, they had it where you could get a hold of the office if you had any questions or things like that. So I did that. I got a hold of that office, Adam, and I asked them a couple questions. And the secretary was also, she was versed in remote viewing as well, could tell the interest that I had. And she asked me, well, you know, Tony, do you think you have an interest in taking a class on learning remote viewing? Because we're going to be teaching civilians here very shortly. And I remember thinking to myself, and I said to her shortly, you know, right after, I said, I don't think I'm ready for something like this. Well, she said, you know, if you do think about it, you know, she wasn't pushy. You know, we advise you also take a course in meditation, because that would be good to learn before you come out here and learn the idea of what we call scientific remote viewing. So I hung up the phone, and a couple of days go by, and I made the choice to learn transcendental meditation out of the Maharishi Vedic schools at a satellite school. I'm out in the Metro Detroit area of Michigan. And one of those schools out there, I think they were located in the Mideast at the time, maybe Wisconsin, their headquarters in the U.S. And then obviously it's a Eastern philosophical practice. So I took that week-long course, very eye-opening. And at the end of that, you know, you could also enhance this type of thing. We need you to practice. This was back in 1997, the spring of 1997. And maybe look into the idea of the out-of-body experience at the Monroe Institute, which was out of Faber, Virginia. So I went out to the Monroe Institute for a week-long course and started the out-of-body experience. And both The study of remote viewing and the out-of-body experience involved getting information from taste, sight, touch, sound, and smell without being there firsthand, bringing it back, and recording it. So I went back to the Monroe Institute a year later for another more advanced course in the study of the out-of-body experience. And that's where I found out, you know, and I knew this before too, is that the military, for their program, their prerequisite was also learning about the out-of-body experience through the Monroe Institute as well. And two guest instructors were also there. The second time I was there, Joe McMonagle and Skip Atwater, who were former military remote viewers, and they were also helping with the start of the out-of-body experience and some remote viewing information as well. Then I went back to the Far Site in 2002. And between 1997 and 2003, Adam, I literally remote viewed hundreds of targets or monitored them. But if you were to ask me, am I an expert at remote viewing, I would say no. But I've had quite a few successes, but I've had quite a few misses too. But I also became quite efficient at teaching it because I was also a personal trainer for some time with my own business. And so then I started teaching remote viewing on the side as well. And, you know, that's, you know, back in the 2000s. And then I got involved in I remote viewed a lot of different things, but two different cases. One was called The Secrets of Red Gate, about UFO abductions in the Montana area. And then the other one was The Artificiality on Mars? Where I was working with several military viewers.
The Mars thing.
Yes.
Explain that.
Yes. I was asked to participate as a blind viewer. Blind means you do not know what the target is. That's right. Always the best way to look at any target. Then you go through the protocols and phases and you write down the information that you get. And then you compare notes with other people. You don't do it with the other people. I did these on my own. I knew what the targets, you know, they gave me the target coordinates. That's all you get is two sets of four digits. And then you, as you learn how to do remote viewing, that's all you'll need. Then you go through the particular protocols and phases. You get all the data. You have it all written down. It's all handwritten. And then I faxed in my results. And the results were that we were looking at a target on Mars that had artificial structures. And we all got that. And at my website, it goes into a 13-minute video. Professor Brown presents it at the Society of Scientific Exploration. It was in Colorado. I believe it was the year 2011. It was presented, and it shows some of the slides and how the viewers put it all together. It's like putting together puzzle pieces, but you'd be surprised, Adam. Even when I first learned the course, back in 97, you know, we would be sectioned off into two different groups, like six or seven people in a group. And we would have these little stalls where we would all be separated. And we had, you know, you couldn't see the next person next to you, which would be like 6 feet away type of thing. And you just would get your target coordinates and you go through your protocols and phases as you learned it, once you learned it. And then you come into the middle of the classroom and you'd have like a table and you have your sessions put there. And then the monitor would look at those one at a time. And you'd be surprised just if you look at these sessions and these people are all blind at a target, how some people come up, three, four people out of a group of seven will come up with some of the same exact things and little things at that. So that's how I knew there was definitely something to this and it could work.
I'll tell you what I think real quick. Here's an idea. Especially with the artificial structures on Mars.
Yep.
Keep in mind, for people who are doing what you're doing, it's an outer body thing, right? And you're using, and I don't doubt anything with the human brain. That's the most powerful computer we've ever seen. And right. It's also a transmitter in a way.
Good way of putting it. Very good.
Yeah. So you're
a good student here.
I read as much as possible. So when you're doing this, perhaps maybe you're moving forward or backward in time. It may not be a real-time thing you're viewing.
Right. It could be that those artificial structures are from the past or in the future that this is being done. That I'm not sure. I just know what I got.
Well, yeah, I mean, when
I actually was viewing it.
When you're going to remote view and you're using your brain, now your brain being the transmitter, the ultimate computer, energy source.
I like to think of it as an antenna.
Right,
and yeah. It picks up electron interface.
Right.
Because we're all connected.
So at said point, when you're doing that, what I say this in parallels too. You don't know what verse you're in when you're leaving. That's what I'm saying. You might be seeing something past or maybe something future. I mean,
correct.
That's probably part of the study they should utilize, especially when you're going out of space, right?
Right. Well, yeah. I honestly didn't think I was anywhere in space. I honestly thought it was someplace in Hawaii that was barren in a, you know, volcanic type of area that had some structures in it. That's how my conscious mind deducted it.
Right.
Because your conscious mind is going to come up. It all, your ego always has a play when you remote view, and you have a place for that. It's called deduction. So when you start labeling or trying to name anything you're looking at, you have to go off to the right-hand side, write the letter D hyphen, write out what you're labeling or what you're guessing, drop your pen, take a couple breaths, take a break from it, pick the pen back up, go back to your protocols and phases. Because we're never trying to name or guess a target when you're truly doing remote viewing. You're just recording what you're sensing from your five senses, but you're doing it from an extrasensory right. standpoint because you're not there firsthand.
You know, I have a theory. I shared this with a few people. My theory on the gray aliens is it's evolving as I learn more, but ultimately I think the grays are a advanced biomechanical robot. I think
I call them like biobots.
Right. So yeah, and so the ones that created them I think are biological, but I think they only come here in the form of they're transmitting here, right? Like you're seeing a really advanced form of like in Star Wars, so they'd pull that thing up, you'd see them speaking. Something of right. that nature. I mean, because I hear about them, they travel the walls.
It's a good theory. I'm not going to disagree with that at all.
I think, because that's what I would do. If I went to a strange planet, could I breathe that air? These people look dangerous. And if you look at humans, we're dangerous. I would definitely send the robots, and then I would probably use an advanced hologram for myself here, right? Because there's no shot I'm going to go around these people. These humans are out of their minds.
Well, you know, that's where we really get into more of the philosophical stuff. I think I totally agree with part of what we call gray aliens. Maybe almost, you know, I've met Jim Sparks. He's a famous alleged contactee, abductee, and he came to the conclusion that, you know, the different races will use beings similar to grays. They may not all look the same.
No, of course
not. Maybe these part of these five star, you know, head, two arms, two legs type of proteges, or just, you know,
so here, put this in surrogates. Your head. Put this in your head. The little grays are they're the blah 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 new version of their drones. Doesn't mean one race is sending them out there. It's just the one that, hey, well, they have those little gray things. Can we buy some of those? We want to see Earth too.
Exactly. That's what Spark says, that's some of the genetic material that's gained from us is used in that perspective too. They're not, yes, they are put what we would call robotic, maybe some of them. Some of them may be more real. Some of the taller ones, some of the ones that look like mantis beings are probably actual beings that can come and go into different dimensions and different frequencies. This subject, I mean, you're talking about the universe, and this is just one universe here in the third dimension. In my opinion, there's many dimensions of existence, but there's also a lot of mis and disinformation in there too. So I don't want you to think I believe every little thing. Most of it, I think there's a lot of, you know, probably black budget projects that use the same type of devices that do their abductions and things as well, potentially.
Well, you know, there's a lot we can't comprehend.
Where's that 15% of the brain?
Yeah, I mean, we can't comprehend. We can't, like the thing with ghosts, why some people are psychic, why others aren't. Some people use different parts of their brain. And I said this before too. I've read of people with brain injury that one day they could just play piano at a master's level.
Now, you're right.
So when you injure one part of the brain, the other parts of the brain are trying to compensate. Now you might have used correct. What they call your better part of your transmitter. It's now the compensation part, which is why you could do
right. But they may forget how to tie their shoes in the process.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
You know, it's like Einstein couldn't drive a car. He had to ride a bike everywhere. He had trouble balancing his checkbook. But we know he's a genius, so far ahead of his time in different areas. You know, it's the black holes and all those type of things that he discovered. You know,
relativity. You're familiar with fiber optics, right? How they work
a little bit.
Well, they transmit information via light instantly, right?
Yes.
And then you look at the cosmic web, and then you look how it's connected to everything. And imagine if we could hone or come up with a way to utilize that cosmic web to transmit both information, perhaps maybe one day us as a form of travel, that's instant connections to anywhere in the universe.
Yeah, that's like that movie K-Pax with Kevin Spacey.
I never saw that.
I think you would enjoy it.
I'll have to watch it. You're the second person to mention it to me after I talked about this.
There you go. There's a synchronicity right there.
Yeah. But I always look at a cosmic web, and I think that must be like the universe's fiber optics. And then imagine advanced beings that have figured out how to use that. Of course they can come and go as they please.
Absolutely. Even us, maybe in the future, and some of us in the past, and even maybe some of us as we are sitting here or standing right now in a different dimension of existence, we may actually have lives that are going on simultaneously, but just in different realms, kind of like we're the radio, but yet as we tune into different frequencies, we have a whole different dimension of existence. The radio doesn't move, but the frequency changes and the song is different, or the sports report or the news report, it's all different. It's all a frequency. That's how I think dimensions are. We are in the third dimension. We're from, you know, this number to that number, et cetera.
Right. You know, I said this to other people. I'm like, you know, when we're out there testing these nuclear bombs in these vacant areas, how do we know that? Because again, you're harnessing the power of the sun in a bomb, right? That's you're defying.
Yeah,
you're defying physics, right? So what if you're blowing this bomb up in the middle of blah, blah, blah desert? And meanwhile, in another verse, you're killing a whole civilization. You're blowing up a whole city.
Or you're at least hitting the alarm button for them to come out and check it out.
I mean,
and that's what Linda Moulton Howe has come up with too. I mean, she basically felt that when we started doing these tests, and many people felt this, they were basically a beacon. Okay, these guys are doing this. We got to come out there and take a look at it now.
Yeah. So here, I say this to a lot of people. I'll invite you to listen to. So we're walking in the park and we see an ant pile. And we notice that these ants are using combustion engine cars and they're flying planes and they're having wars. And our response is going to be shut that park down. Let's study this. Let's see the evolution of this ant colony and these two separate colonies that are just constantly at each other's throats. Well, keep it to scale. We won't really get involved. We're going to pay attention. We're going to watch. It'll be all over National Geographic, have its own channel, whatever. Until one day we see an explosion that knocks out one of their cities, which is equivalent to a foot for us in scale, right? We're like, whoa, what are they doing? Did you just see that? They just blew up a whole square foot. So yeah, now we're going
to... Yeah, went from a firecracker to a stick of dynamite. Right. Somebody's got to look into this now.
Now we're going to want to see their facilities, how they're making this stuff. We're not going to get involved because it's National Geographic. We're there to study, right?
I think that's part of it. Yes. I think part of it is scientific exploration by some groups. And here's where you and I might get a little deep and philosophical type of talk, too, because I've been looking at this as a long time and I'm learning, or I should say remembering, every day. But I think as we learn and use more of our brain, and I think when I learned about the out-of-body experience and the remote viewing studies and the practices, I think I started opening up. And then I had to come up with a bigger picture still. I mean, the universe, you can't put, if you want to say God, the universe, nature, you can't put that in a box. And us at 10 to 15% brain capacity, even though one person might be using a different part than another person, and they can see ghosts, and this person can, and that person can't, it's still just a very tiny amount of what's going on. And I think J. Allen Hynek said it best, you know, towards the end there. He said, when we discover the secret to UFOs, it's going to be one hell of a quantum leap. His key word there was quantum.
Right.
This goes into quantum mechanics. I mean, you talk about black holes that are above, where do they go? In my opinion, if there's dimensions, those black holes are below also. It's just a question of access to it. Different theoretical physicists, you know, Garrett Lisi, Clear, when Nassim Haramein, et cetera, they're starting to look at the ideas of protons, electrons, in certain ways, in certain tilts. If you can have access somehow, some way, they're like black holes. They can go from one, it gets a really tiny particle. It's like the two pyramids on top of each other, the points from one point to a larger point. That's just like black holes. You know, there's the old saying, what is above is also below.
Right.
So when these people open up these stargates or they open up these portals, they have to have an opening somewhere, somehow, and quantum mechanics eventually, and I think we're on the verge of it now. We've got the Large Hadron Collider and things like that, doing all those experiments. And
I'll tell you when that's going to come to fruition. Hear this out. Elon Musk is going to have, he has Neuralink, and this is to help, you know, in the beginning to correct brain injury, right? Eventually, it's going to become, you know, what it is today. We can communicate without words, et cetera, et cetera. But just like humans do with computers today, we're going to find out a way to hack that. Now, you have something attached to your brain, right? And you hack that, and you start discovering more about your brain, we're going to have no choice but to deal in quantum physics because it's exposed.
Right.
And you have intelligent people utilizing a super powerful chip in their head. That's the best of both worlds. I imagine that's when philosophy and science will start merging more.
Yes, I've always talked about that, where the metaphysical and the science start, philosophy, they all start merging together because they're all describing or looking for the same thing. And it's just a tomato type of thing. You know, it's just, right. Well, this is how we, you know, say it. And it's people that have strong beliefs in other ways. So this is how we explore it and say it. But it's all still just a finite, very small amount. And I'm a great, you know, before I used to believe, oh, there could be a God. Now I'm more of a knowing there is a universal creative source. Okay. It's just constantly creating and recreating. And it's just kind of playing itself out. This is just my philosophy on it, Adam, that it's, that's what we're all part of. Our essence, our higher frequency and essence of, you know, goes into more of a larger scale dimension, knowing, then more of a group consciousness and, you know, a massive consciousness and then other networking consciousness. It's all one large energy that's constantly creating and recreating. And we have an essence, you know, third dimension, our bodies may not be that close to it, but there's an essence to us, whether you want to call it a subconscious mind, a soul, a spirit, whatever you want, that's at a higher vibratory plane that's more connected to that group or higher source. See, and I say that because my learnings of the out-of-body experience at the Monroe Institute, and there are times where I will lie down at night and I will be getting close to going to sleep. And then when I hit that theta brainwave state, you've got your delta, which is when you're sleeping, it's below 4 hertz. Then you have your theta brainwave state, which is between 4 and 7 hertz. That's just before you go to sleep and just before you wake. And that's when you're open to more subtle energies. Then you have your alpha, which is your daydreaming between 8 and 14 hertz. And then you have 15 and 32 hertz is your,
I'm glad you said that,
which is your awake.
I'm glad you said it. So here's a common thing I'm finding this a lot. Vibrations are big. I've spoken to a lot of afterlife people like Roberta Grimes and others, and even in psychics, even in the paranormal, I find that that's a parallel on all of these things, that the vibrations and the levels. Now,
yes,
I'm glad you say this because something I read struck me as interesting. Most people have near death experiences every single night. You know, every night you go to bed is legitimately the closest you are to being dead while alive. I when I read that, it blew me away.
Well, dead in a third dimension.
Well, yeah, in a state, right? So
right.
When you say that, so I had some wild dreams last night. I'm going to go into detail, but I had some wild dreams, and they're very real to me, so much so that there's a physical effect upon you when you wake up.
Sure. I think some people could die of heart attacks in their dreams, and that's how people have these attacks when they sleep at night.
Yeah, because it's intense. It's real. Like yes, in my dream last night, that was real. I was really there. I saw these people. So
your mind won't know.
And it's bizarre because maybe it's like coincidental, but you wake up from the dream and you get a phone call from a friend and you have a conversation and somehow it leads almost into the subject you had a dream about.
Right. And if you can make, that's what the Monroe Institute tapes do. They allow you to collect information from the theta brainwave state. What they do is they play a binarial beat. It's between 5 and 20,000 hertz is one waking hearing, you have instruction that's going on. That's one beat that's going on. And then you have one that's below, I believe, 1.5 hertz. And that's only your subconscious mind can hear it. It's playing in the background. And that's called a binarial beat. And what that does is it creates a cerebral-like wavelength inside your brain that creates a neurological effect. And that effect at times can allow you to bring information back from your theta brainwave state to your beta brainwave state. So just, you know, that when you're more open, then you bring it and you got it and you got that information down, then you write it down. That's how that works at the Monroe Institute. That's one of the things that they do, you know, in terms of their binarial beats with the Monroe tapes that you listen to when you lie down. And when I did that, after I got home, there would be some times, and even now once in a while, and listen to this one, to where, and I wrote about this in the book I wrote too, I'll be sleeping at night or just about ready to fall asleep. Then all of a sudden it's like inside my head, there's this real whipping, spinning around. And then it's all of a sudden where I'm going up and out from that area. And then I have a consciousness knowing that this is happening. And it's pretty, you know.
Do you get nervous? Like a nervous feeling in your stomach when this happens?
I will get nervous at times and other times I won't. But there are times without question, I do remember, again, that theta to the beta brainwave state thing. I have to shut my conscious brain down and my body down because the frequency that you're entering into is so, it's nothing that the body, the heart, or even your mind can handle. Okay. I'm talking about the mind that works in the brain. There's an essence to us that I was talking about earlier that's part of a bigger picture. that is when I shut myself down. It's almost like a safety mechanism type of thing.
Right. You know, I personally think that our consciousness and our soul are one and the same. I think it's the same thing. It's why it's a mystery to science. And scientists want to have doubt on it. A lot of these scientists don't know, God, it's not real. It's because they can't cut you open and find it physically. But
right.
You also can't physically cut open a brain and see a memory, but we know they're there.
Well, let's put it to you this way, Adam. Hundreds of years ago, it was physically impossible to get a bacterial or viral infection because they couldn't see it. They couldn't measure it. Now, due to our, subatomic, microscopes and all the different things that we have going on, you can easily pick up viruses and bacteria and things like that. But that was all science fiction back when the world was flat and all of that type of stuff.
If you go back to that time, you showed them a smartphone today, you get burned at the stake. No questions.
Absolutely.
And so it's really,
Giordano Bruno would agree with that.
Yeah, it's really about how opening your mind. You have to listen. It's a big deal to me when I hear people say things like, "Well, I just don't see how it's possible." Well, then you can carry on your complacent way and never learn new things. Congratulations, you're stuck where you are. I make room for a lot.
I thought like that too, and I'm not saying better or worse, but then I realized, as we go into the bigger picture, you have to have yin to have yang. You got to have yellow to appreciate blue, to understand what red is, to understand and appreciate orange. If everybody thought the same, I think the creative source would just be bored off its gourd. So I think it goes through all these different
frequencies. We get recycled.
It's all the infinity loop, Adam.
I say that. I'm glad you said that. That's one of the things I have. So when I started this podcast, my belief system was this. When you died, the computer turned off, and that was it. Lights out. Now, after reading and interviewing and learning more, I come to the conclusion that, again, our consciousness and our soul, same thing. It's just we're pure energy. And then you look at our brain. You look at the construct of the universe, or the connections of the universe. And I think we get recycled, or we go on to the next level. Depending, here's another kind of how I think. If you're a good person here, and when you pass, your energy gets passed on to some other portion, like through that little cosmic web, our fiber optic cables, it goes somewhere else where good people go. If you're a bad person, you get recycled. You got to start again. You're a jerk. Try again. Right?
But you need that, though.
Yeah.
You got to have those yin and yangs, because if you have nothing to compare or to measure it with, you have no experience. If I ask you a question, Adam, are you a good person? What would your answer be?
I'm a terrible person. Selfish.
Okay. You got to have something to compare it to. Whether you say you're a good person or a bad person, I would say you're more of a good person. I think you're learning. You're becoming more and more aware every day and remembering what you're connected to. But you can't even make statements. We couldn't even communicate at this level of existence, the third dimension. I think as you go into higher frequencies, it's less difference in what's going on. Maybe not, the fourth dimension per se, just for a figure of speech, or maybe icons or archons there that are, what we'd still call negative and trying to influence us a certain way and all that type of stuff. And we would call them whatever, extremely negative, devil, demons,
etc. Here's what you're describing right now. You're describing a well-oiled machine.
Absolutely.
That's exactly.
It's the source playing itself out.
Yeah. So by saying that, that's why I think there's an architect above all. I think the misconception, people are like, oh, there's a God. Sure there is. It's an architect. He's the creator of all. What is it, our physical form there? Who knows? And it's good to have mystery, because without mystery, again, it's that same part of that archetype.
That's what I mean. You got to have it, or you have no experience.
Right.
It's like the whole Shakespeare thing. The world is a stage type of thing. How we look at players on the stage, you got a good person, a bad person, a victim, and this one dies, that one lives, and at the end of the play, you pull the curtain and they're all there standing again, taking a bow, and you clap, you like the performance. Well, maybe the soul or spirit, as you're talking about, that part of that aspect of existence in a relative way looks at our bodies.
Right. Here's what I do a lot, especially when it comes to aliens. I try to compare. I do it like if I were the alien. If I'm traveling with myself and other aliens, and I stumble across, let's say I come across planet Earth, I made a wrong turn in the universe, and I look down at these people, and I'm like, holy crap, these people hate each other. I'm going to watch for a while, because I don't think they're ready. I'm definitely not ready to speak to them. They're dangerous, but I'm going to observe, because they're interesting too. It's really, we're the best channel there is currently. There's every kind of entertainment here on Earth. Every kind.
Oh, yeah.
But the biggest disappointment for our planet currently still, and I say this a lot, and I don't want to beat this dead horse, but we're still racist. How is that possible? How is it possible now in this
Because we don't live that long. We're still trying to live longer and pass out advices. And maybe this is more of a, again, maybe you need, somebody needs this play out to take place, and it needs that type of thinking for a little bit longer. But you got to remember, we're not as bad as we used to be. 200 years ago or 250 years ago, only white wealthy landowners could vote, you know,
right.
And then male at that. So, you know, then it got, yeah. And then, so we got, you know, there was slavery and things like that. I mean, I'm not saying we're perfect, because we're not. If we were, we wouldn't even be vibrating in this frequency, but along that infinity loop there, we've come a little bit further than we were 150, 200 years ago.
Oh, even I agree.
50 years ago.
Yeah,
I mean, now you go to a major university, Adam, and you've got, you know, African American, Indian, Middle Eastern, white, Asian, they'll all work together in science projects now. That was unheard of 50 years ago.
Yeah, it's too bad we can't do that in communities, right? Because that would be
well,
great.
Well, eventually, if we keep brainwashing the youngsters, you know, but maybe somebody has a program there. You know, I used to own a fitness center, and as long as, and you had all kinds of kids, all kinds of races, different that, we had a children's center, and again, all different types of backgrounds, ethnicities, etc. As long as they all had enough toys, they never fought.
Right. Yeah, listen, I grew
up. And they didn't care what color or anything else that was going on. Yeah, that's all learned behavior.
I grew up in Brooklyn, and I didn't even know what racism was till I moved to Florida and I was in my teens. I didn't really I mean, of course, you had an idea, but I didn't really fully comprehend what it was. In Brooklyn, in my neighborhood, it was predominantly Spanish, Italian, Asian, and Black, all in my neighborhood, right?
Right.
And so when you went to school, you didn't see Asian, Black, or White, or Italian. You didn't see that. You just saw John or Jason. You didn't. That's all you knew. It wasn't until I came to Florida and I was in my teens.
It would be the same way with ETs if you were in school with ETs like it is on Star Trek. It wouldn't even matter unless you're conditioned to think differently.
Right. And that's so you come to Florida and here. So people understand, Florida, when I came here, every big city moved here because they all had the same idea. I'm going to go to Florida, give my kids a better life. Well, you made it a melting pot. And when you put that many diversities and whether there be, and it starts in a home. It's a big thing too to say. Like we said earlier about how they're conditioned, starts in a home. If there's disgruntled children there, they're going to, and kids are mean, period. But when you have a disgruntled and you have something like a race car to get thrown around, and that's how I learned it, by the way. I didn't hear some of those words, slurs, in my teens. I was shocked. I was like, what?
Yeah.
So, you know, circling back, now you have another race of beings, more advanced, and they see what's going on here. We're better to observe than to interact with. We're much better to observe. Safer anyway.
Well, I would agree with that for at least for now.
Right. But
until we start working out more of our differences. And again, like I pointed out, we are getting better. I mean, I like to have hope with the human race on that cycle of that infinity, you know, loop there. But, you know, I'm so objective about it now. I just think it is where it needs to be. And there's others that need it there as well as we do. But it's not about, you know, there's that old saying, yesterday I thought I was very smart and I was going to change the world. Well, today I'm much wiser and know I can change myself. I mean, that's how I look at it.
And you should. And I applaud that. You know,
and I'm not here to change anybody. You know, even though I may learn and remember more of who and what I'm part of, but every person that wakes up a little bit more because people like you have a show or people, you know, like Christina Gomez.
Yeah, she's fantastic. Yeah,
absolutely. And Claus. And I mean, the name goes on.
Claus got me grounded in reality. I appreciated him. He really grounded me in reality. He made me rethink a lot of things and reevaluate a lot.
It was a good show. I listened to it twice. I was really impressed.
I appreciate it. Yeah, he's in the know. I'm going to have him on again, definitely. Again, after speaking to him, I had to sit down and rethink a lot. And that's good. How I evolved. My thoughts on certain things evolved. And that's a great thing because, again, I'm always going to be a student. Even if I become the leading person who speaks about this, I'm still a student because I don't know everything. I I've been playing pool.
I don't think you can in this dimension, but you can at least be aware of things.
Right.
And be open to them. And that it all starts with having an open mind. And then I think you've got to take out relative subjectivity and try to be more objective if you can do that. And that was the route I went. And once I started getting into that, the peace of mind started coming more regularly, and understanding that I'm part of a creative source kind of playing itself out. Even though you would like things to be better, they are in some instances, but they aren't in others. You realize there's maybe some groups here that want to keep it that way. Maybe another group is using us as thumb drives and needs negative experiences to go along with positive experiences, because maybe they're recreating creation. Yeah. There's a hierarchy to all this, and you need all this diversity for the beings that are above us to have to look at and learn and be aware, so they don't make more mistakes, so to speak. Okay. And there's little civilizations that are behind us. Look at us 1,000 years ago.
I'm glad you said that, man, because here's what I was watching this documentary yesterday, and they were talking about the center of the universe. I'm like, oh, it's much older and things there must be more advanced. Well, that's not true. It could be that something out there is in the Stone Age. It could be that a comet,
absolutely,
out of nowhere, a comet hit this planet that's well older than ours, but a comet hit, and now it has atmosphere and water,
right.
Now life could actually start being made there. So they might be behind us. I really believe the first traces
of
life that we're going to find.
Panspermia theory.
Yeah, I think the first bit of life we're going to find is going to be primitive, and we're going to want to study it. I really think that.
I've thought about it before. What would be the best way to define it? I think maybe something that's not too threatening. Maybe something, I'm talking to different people, it might be more like architectural stuff that was from the past. So it's not a threat to us right now, and it might not throw every strong belief system into a loop where you just say, well, you know what? We found architecture on this planet. Maybe it's Mars, or maybe it's Venus, or somebody close. And then if you say, well, okay, if these two planets have it and they're right next to each other, we're just one speck of sand on an endless beach, not to mention all the dimensions. I mean, we have to become spacefaring sooner or later anyways, because we'll be taken out by a solar arcing flare by the sun, or we'll be taken out by a rogue asteroid or some type of upheaval. There could be all kinds of things. So we have to be spacefaring at some point. And I think past civilizations have come and gone here on Earth, and people from history would be alien to us now. And some of them probably got off world or tunneled deep under the ground.
I firmly believe, because of the age of this planet and everything I've been reading, we are definitely not the first advanced beings to be here.
Not even close, I would say, Adam.
And then, you have to be.
You said Graham Hancock said it best. We become.
Oh, God, I love that guy.
Species with amnesia.
Yeah. So, I mean, think about this. There could have been something. How hard is it to trace beings like us just 4 or 5 million years ago? It's pretty hard. Now imagine 1 billion years ago. The remnants of that are near gone. So
there's no such thing as time. That's a man-made brain construction.
Right.
The universe of the source is not time. It's just like I don't believe in the Big Bang theory very much as I used to think or take it into consideration.
Same here.
Where is that bang going? It's got to be going somewhere that's already there. It's not creating it. It's already there. So space and time, back when I was 7 years old, it's not what we think it is. It's a measuring tool in this type of existence and this type of experience, so to speak.
Yeah, because if you consider this, man, if according to Big Bang theory, like, and this is what gives me the problem, the star alignments are pretty much the same for thousands of years, and everything. If look at Mars, when you look at Mars when you're on planet Earth and you see Mars, it passes through the sky. You have an idea of like what time of the year and how it passes by. Everything else should be moving further away in that theory. And I don't know.
Right.
I feel like the measurements are pretty much the same.
Yeah. See, I think that I do believe the Big Bang theory, even though I just contradicted myself. I believe they go on, but I don't believe they're creating the universe. I believe there's universes within universes, that it's just going into other realms, other universes. I don't believe it's just one thing and all of a sudden as it goes out, it's being created. No, it's going somewhere.
Yeah, especially when, what I say this to a lot of people. Does it occur in nature often? Sure. If you look at a cosmic web, look at a brain, look at a spider web. That's where the cosmic web got the name cosmic web. It looks like a spider web. It's a reoccurring thing, but it's because it works. An architect, they might.
And beautiful in design.
Right. When an architect designs something, this works. But what materials you use after that depends on how your technology evolves. So right. it's going to remain pretty much
over
the same.
That cycle. Yep. In that infinity loop again, where it is. Yep.
I'll tell you when I think intelligent beings watching us are going to reach out. Here's what I predict. Eventually, Elon Musk is going to take us to Mars. And the requirements to go to Mars is what your contribution to that planet is. What can you do here? On the application, it's not going to say, it's not going to ask you what your race is. It's not going to ask you what your religion is, your politics, none of that.
Right.
What is your contribution to that planet to make it livable and habitable for mankind? And it's going to be
terraformed.
Right. It's going to be science driven. And right. These
when
are going to be like,
when we remote viewed that, it's being terraformed, whether that's in the future or it was going on back in the early, 2010, whatever it was. Some very talented remote viewers, and not even including myself on this because I won't say that, but very talented people in that genre have came to the same different conclusions that something is going on there. And it's definitely underground water, whatever you want to call it.
Like a reservoir.
Yeah, reservoir. Something is being developed there.
I honestly believe when you were telling me earlier, the first thing that popped in my head is like he's in the future. Not that saying psychic, but again, when you're using your powerful computer to leave and to remote view, you're passing through a plane that we don't comprehend yet. You might have been 1,000 years in the future. You don't know.
But the only thing was to say on that, and I don't know if I mentioned this initially, is we were remote viewing different pictures that were taken by an orbiter that looked at Mars. And if you go to my website and look at that 13-minute video, those were the actual targets that we looked at. And they were taken by, our space-time, maybe 15 years ago or 12 years ago or whatever it was.
Have our rovers gotten to those locations yet or no?
Oh, yeah, we've circled and taken pictures of it and all kinds of stuff with Mars.
Yeah, but for the spot you're talking about, did a rover make it to that location yet?
I'd have to look and see, exactly if I can find what that was in terms of...
Because a lot of people ask me, one of the questions I'm supposed to ask...
Yeah, it was called Source Photo, Mars Orbital Camera, Narrow Angle Image M11, it talks about it, NASA Jet Propulsion Laboratory, Space Science Systems. That was it. And then those were the targets we looked at from those camera images.
Huh. Some of the questions I get regarding Mars is, why haven't we gone to the poles to investigate? And, I initially I was like, well, maybe because it's already a cold planet. Maybe it's just frozen. It's infeasible for the mechanics of the machines. But... that is a great question. That would be a good place to go start looking for the idea to terraform. You're talking about natural occurring ice on that planet. That would be a great place to start.
Well, that's one thing. It's telling you there's water.
Yeah, and then you could work your way down. Because like, look at what the ancient Romans did, man. They made aqueducts. I mean, these were advanced aqueducts for their time. Right. Just to transport water from one location to the other to make it more habitable. So you would think that would be the place. That's probably going to be Elon's job, right? That's where he's going to
Well, he's going to be one of them, that's for sure. Yeah. I think, in my opinion, I think there's already been civilizations there. There may be some terraforming at some places. Maybe it's more of an underground thing. Maybe some of the planets or a lot of the planets, maybe their most advanced civilizations actually may be more in the underground areas or in the water depths or under the ocean, those bases. That was one of the things that really brought me over into understanding, yes, there is other intelligences here, was the USOs, the unidentified submerged objects. After talking to different Navy people and some of the things that they had seen, that would be the perfect place here on Earth because it's 70% water, basically, and the oceans are not that greatly explored. And if they are, it's something to do with naval research or naval intelligence. And that would be the place for them to operate. And if they can have bases on the bottom or even underneath those areas, you're talking about such an advanced civilization. And there's been other whistleblowers that have talked about, working in these black ops programs and that, there's ETs that are kind of like our genetic cousins that come here, and that work with us because they're in this dimension, even though they may be more advanced than us. But there's other ETs that have bases here that are more almost multidimensional. And even us and the ETs like us that are around our sophistication, our advanced, corporate black ops technologies can't do anything about it because they're so far beyond even their comprehension. And that's where I got into that whole idea, the philosophical, it's a bigger picture. There's beings it beyond just ETs, dimensional, physical, quasi-physical? And maybe I think somewhere down the line, Adam, at the very tip, only to start another beginning, there's more such an advanced group race that's recreating creation, because that's the essence of who we are, Adam. We are creating. We like to create gardens. We like to create artwork, music, procreate, all these things. We are explorers.
We're not even content with our bones.
That's our innate nature, that true essence to create and explore. And that's why we're all, I think, in some aspect of ourselves is part of that divine, universal, creative source that's omnipresent everywhere and everywhen, that's beyond space and time.
That's why we spend a lot of time looking to the sky for answers, man. It's because we, just how you said it, we stare at the stars for answers.
We must equally look inside ourselves. Right. The masters talk to us too, whether it's, you know, Christ or Buddha or Krishna. The kingdom is within as well. Just as it is outside, it is inside.
Try this on for size, by the way. Now do you bring up the underwaters, right? And what, there was a military video that I saw recently where they, I think it was in night vision, and this thing, so you hear him say splash, it goes underwater, no sounds. I amplified the volume for that in my Sennheiser headphones to the point where it was ear piercing, and I never heard a splash. And you could see that object, which tells me it's displacing the space around it.
Oh, right. Yeah. So now, it has a vacuum around it that basically takes out, you know, any type of inertia, whether it's going through space and you've got that whistling, or you're going through water and you got that splashing. There's no question. Some of these USOs are way more advanced than even the, you know, the technologies that we have that are part of our advance, or even extraterrestrial advance types. I think there's other beings that have technologies that come here periodically and use wormholes or stargates, etc., that have their own projects going on.
Yeah, I mean, here, keep this in mind too. I say this, I've said this in the past. I've evaluated the David Fravor, you know, incident over and over again in my head. It goes from 80,000 feet to 0 feet to, all right, so when he first sees it, there's something underwater already, and then the Tic Tacs above it. So this is where my imagination comes into play. Why is that happening? Well, the answer is pretty simple. They're transporting something from space. That is their elevator down to the ground level. Yep. You're transferred to that underground vehicle, which then takes you to a base that may be underwater and in the underground of the actual continent.
Absolutely. So, I think you got that correct, Adam. I think they're going through space and time way different than what we understand it to be.
Right. So their ability to transfer from one vehicle to the another is not something we could comprehend. And now here's the other thing.
Doesn't mean we won't.
They could, now you have to understand this is an advanced technology, so they could hack. So someone brought this out to me, like, and I was dumbfounded by it too, but it ended up in his cap point, you know, the place of origin, where they're supposed to be, and no one's supposed to know it. And then I thought about it. This thing could easily, if it's moving forward and backward through time in a way we can't comprehend, it would know where to be. So it's not a fact that it was there first. It was there before. Yeah. Beforehand.
It's point A and point B. That's why I think some UFOs, think of this, you know, they're in similar locations, only sometimes somebody will see that location and there'll be a UFO report. And then, you know, 30 years later in that same location, there's another UFO report of a similar object. Well, that doesn't mean it's 30 years later for that object. It just might have been a time loop, and we see it 30 years later. Right. Think about that.
The way we perceive it is completely altered, right?
Right.
So
again,
I think also, and so here's another big thing too. Like I said earlier with the ants, we have these military operations. They're going to observe us. They're going to want to see what we're doing. They're going to want to pay attention. Like every time I hear the Foo Fighters or anything like that around wartime scenarios, it's picture the History Channel. If we had the ability to fly around our subjects, being the animals, up close and personal without disturbing them, we're going to do that. We're going to do that without even a second thought. And so a lot of this for me is observation. A lot of this for me is, I still think this, whether this be spoken for life or death, the afterlife, ufology, or the paranormal, I think Earth is a proving ground for something greater or lesser, depending on how you behave here.
It could be both. It doesn't mean it has to be any one thing. It could be both for different beings. you know, how we look at an anthill now might be different than how we looked at an anthill, a thousand years ago. Even the beings themselves may look at us differently. I mean, you've said it before, it could be type of a project going on for some races. It could be type of a science observation for others. It could be us. Let me say it real quick. I don't know if you're familiar with Raymond Fowler, a longtime ufologist.
No, I'm not. But
he worked with the near-death experiences and stuff. He was through the mid-60s, late-60s, part of MUFON, et cetera, one of the founding fathers of that organization. Fowler worked, I'm going to read this, his quotes out of his book, The Watchers, too. Fowler worked ultimately, his work ultimately took him into a direction of the near-death experience and stated in his book, The Watchers, too. He's exploring UFOs and the near-death experience. The UFO NDE, which is near-death experience connection, seems to be telling us that whoever controls the UFO phenomena is intimately connected with the afterlife of human beings. This is a deeply profound revelation with ever-escalating implications for humankind. Whatever the reason, which may be beyond our comprehension, what is called alien interaction, seems to be part of a constant interplay between life here and life in the hereafter. For if we take and integrate the total characteristics of the UFO and near-death experience phenomena at full face value, the bottom line implication is death may be the ultimate UFO experience. And that's what Fowler concluded towards the end of his career.
Huh.
I believe that's part of it.
Yeah, I mean, think about this. I like what he said there, but I kind of had this thought in my head too. And it for me, it explains Skinwalker Ranch, a lot of these other like hot spots. So we're obviously the target of an observation, right? And that doesn't mean one race. There could be one of these alien races that they have the operation and the other ones are paying to get in on it. We want to see too. So anyway, right. That being said, they're observing us and this phenomenon happens. They're watching us and they see something else. And it's one of our spirits that are lingering behind because my thought is spirits that are here. They elect to be here and or it was an instant death and they're in a state of confusion. But in any regard, the alien sees us like, what the hell is that now? Now we got to study that. So they're going to pick a large place that's vast where they could do the study where they saw these initial things. Now, bear in mind, when they're observing these things, we don't know. Like, I've heard people say things about portals over Skinwalker and other locations. But if they're going to set up shop somewhere, like a vacant area, their best technology is going to be there. And of course, abnormal nonsense is going to happen around that. You're talking about energy that's altering the physics around it in every way. So I think about that often. Like, what if ghosts aren't, normal for where they come from because they're an advanced life form. So when they're done, because in order for an advanced life form to come to Earth or travel the vastness of Earth, this is a species that behaves like a species. They're unified. They don't see one another as different. Race doesn't play a card there. They don't care if they're wearing Nikes or whatever else. They're behaving like a species. So you have to be in unity to do that. So perhaps when they pass on, their energy goes right to the next level. There is no ghost on their planet, right? Because they're mentally there. Humans, not saying that we're primitive. Well, we example it often. But we have, again, that's why I think Earth's a proving ground. I think for our species anyhow, whether how you behave here is whether you get recycled or you go to the next level, but they observe something like this here and that's caught their interest.
And I agree with that.
And they're going to study that just as badly as they're going to study us.
Yeah, that's part of some of the beings that are coming here. Some of them, yes.
Yeah, because again, like the orbs, and I bring this up a lot. I hear about the orbs both for ufology and the paranormal. And there's a lot of parallels. If you listen to the episode I have with Steve Murr, he's a parapsychologist. He's a specialist in the paranormal, and he's noticed that the parallels exist as well. And there shouldn't be barriers between these two worlds. They should study together because these orbs, they always seem to be around where there's apparitions and or when there's a UFO sighting. Now try to figure this. And this is me putting myself in a place of aliens. I need technology that could go down there and be my drone and see and observe what's going on down there without me having to go there. And that's what I think some of these orbs are, really high technology form. Because I hear people say that they behave intelligently. So when they're observing ghosts and or us and or whatever they may be observing, that's what they send out ahead of themselves. That's a recon drone. In my thoughts.
Could be true, because they also could be part of the reason why crop circles are created as well. I'm sure some people you've heard about it would see orbs coming out of crop circles after they're formed.
Sure. And, you know, you look at these crop circles, how complex they are. You know, there's a lot of that people did. There are
There's no question. Yeah. It could be lasers, too.
Yeah. There are some I looked at that if people did that, I don't know how they did that. You know, there's those that select 1% that I see that in my mind, there's no shot a person did that.
They're almost like highway signs for other beings that would understand what they are. Like they're traveling and they got a little stop there and it has some type of a magnetic residue and it's kind of like a stopping port. And then they read that real quick and zip off.
Right. And you know, and you're right. That's a good, it can convey information for that time period. It doesn't need to be forever, right? It just had to convey that message.
Right.
Yeah, I like that idea. So for you, I'll give you this question. What happens to us when we die, in your opinion?
Well, my out-of-body experience is not really, in my opinion, going to take the place or precedence of a death experience.
Right.
I feel, you know, that time is part of what's going on, and I think we live simultaneously. It's just kind of like saying, Adam, you know, and I don't have a direct answer, and I'm kind of sidestepping it, but I think there's an aspect of us that is always going to be us, but there's an aspect of us that's always the source. And then I think we go into many simultaneous parts of existence. And I think it's a source just playing itself out, recreating creation over creation. And sometimes we're higher beings, lesser beings that just start off in different places. I think it's constantly an interwove of, you know, it's like the first law of thermodynamics. Energy never goes away. It just changes form. And I'm sure you're familiar with that.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think, you know, when I'm out of the out of body experience, there's a certain aspect of it. Like when I see like some things around me, that's still me. Okay. I know it's still Tony, but once it goes into that higher frequency, there's no more Tony. It's just an awareness of being.
Right.
And I'll throw something at you from Jacques Vallée. And I'm sure you've heard of him, right?
Yeah. I've read a lot of his stuff.
Yes. And he's, you know, cause he was heavily involved. Few people don't know this, but the whole remote viewing when it started out of Stanford Research for a little while as well. And he came up with something, and in his book Dimensions, he says, I propose to describe consciousness as the process by which informational associations are retrieved and traversed. The illusion of time and space would be merely a side effect of consciousness as it traverses the associations. So I tend to lean towards that. I feel that we are aware. We are not the body or the personality that we think we are in the third dimension, even though that's very real. But there's an aspect of us that's even greater than I talked about earlier. And I like Vallée's description of that right now, that it just kind of traverses time and space or with different personalities.
Right. I like that too. You know, and in my thought, like, remember I said earlier about those, you know, the fiber optics and the connections and how we recycle. I think by saying our consciousness and our soul are one of the same, it's pure energy, right?
Yes.
And that energy has information attached to it. Now,
yes,
when you recycle, whether it is you go to another plane or you stay here and recycle, like as they would say, reincarnate, part of that information is attached though. And I think that's where a lot of these people have like this previous life experience, because there's still information attached to your fiber optic.
They know what a soldier's uniform looks like, and it's not even complete at a museum, but they know exactly what it looks like and what's missing, and they'll explain it to the curator, you know, what it is. And they're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this kid 6 years old knows that.
Yeah, no, it was an 8-year-old kid. My goodness, man, that kid shocked me. He was the description, and this was in the 80s. This is before the internet. There's no shot that he just looked this up and tried to make something of it.
Back on TV shows like Unsolved Mysteries, the Paranormal Borderline.
But that kid blew me away with his detail. Yep. It was absolutely picture perfect. And it turns out the soldier wasn't like highly declarated. His plane went down. He died. They didn't even recover the guy's body. And for this kid to pump that information out blew me away. Blew me away. Yeah. You know, you ever seen the movie Groundhog Day?
Yes.
So I did an off podcast interview. I do a lot of those because there's people that don't want to be on air, and that's cool. And he was telling me about he's relived his own life so many times. He's miserable. He's like, I would see an opportunity personally. Like, wait a minute. So you're reincarnated. You know, it's your life. I would see an opportunity. Like, I could right wrongs. I could be rich, you know, but like, he's miserable. And it sounds like maybe I have a, you know, a poor perception on that. Maybe it's not as exciting.
Maybe there's something he's attached to, and I'm not saying I'm any better or any worse. I don't mean anything like that. Just a quick observation sometimes, right, from somebody looking on the outside, looking in. Maybe he's attached to something here, or a subconscious aspect wants to get something right, but it's just not quite getting through to his conscious.
Right. So he gave me the impression, like the way he was talking, it sounded like he just wanted to go to the next level. Why am I here again? I was like, holy crap, man. Like, when I was done talking to him, I was like, I had to think, like, wow, that's torture. Right. Right? Like, so you look at Bill Murray and like in that movie and all that guy did. Yeah. All he did was, I love that movie for what he did in it, right? Because he went from one total
comedy genius.
Yeah, he went from one side to the other side of the spectrum really quick. But when I hear people say things like that, and some of the off podcast interviews I've done, I hear these people speak about their I guess deja vu slash past life. I find a trend. I find a pattern, and that's what I look for when I speak to people, is to see a pattern. And so far, the pattern's pretty consistent. It's somewhere in their early adolescence when these weird memories start occurring. And they can't explain it. And it's like, and they say, well, it's like deja vu, but I actually remember this. Right. And so that's what makes me think to myself, when we pass from here, depending on what we do on here, Earth, the human's proving ground, I should say, depends on what level, what, you know, do you go to the cosmic web ride to the next place? The reincarnate, you know.
Yeah, and I think it's all going on simultaneously inside the web. I mean, it's just, if I ask you, Adam, do you think we're ever going to learn how to time travel? Whether it's 100 years from now, 1,000 years from now, 1,000,000 years from now. Do you think us or anybody will?
I think, personally, with Neuralink and then the idea of a human being hacking their full abilities, I think we might learn quantum physics, and I think we might find an idea on time travel. I don't think it's going to be like Back to the Future, where you could take your body there. I think it's going to be your energy, your consciousness will travel through time.
Could be, or advanced beings that might be, as you said earlier, more energy type beings.
Right.
So let me ask you this. If we ever learn how to do this, whether it's 1,000,000 years from now, 1,000 years from now, or we learned it 1,000 years ago or 1,000,000,000 years ago, then it's going on right now.
Right.
If it's ever going to be or was, then it is.
Right. And so then that being said, there are rules to time travel, right? And let's say we're being observed here by things from the present, past, or billions of years, whatever it may be, they can't interact with us directly and they can't give us answers directly because there's that butterfly effect.
Right. That frequency. They still have to intervene with the frequency that we are in the third dimension, that radio dial.
It's like someone told me, when you drop a pebble into the water and there's ripples, if you do anything to disturb the ripples, you disturb the natural order of that ripple effect. And so when he said
it's
that to me,
deep.
Yeah, it took me back. I'm like, wow, I never really considered that. That's how
that stuff is. It's deep.
Yeah. Time is fluid, right? Both backward and forward, however it works.
Right. So, and it may not exist as the more evolved we become.
No, you're right. Cause you know, who's to say what our consciousness is going to be like in the next realm? We're more aware. We're more self-aware.
Like those UFOs you were talking about that are 80,000 feet dropping. I mean, you know, there's ways, pun intended, there's ways around it as well, because it all has to do with gravity, magnetics, centrifugal forces, quantum mechanics, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. There's a law to it somehow. It's a matter of us perceiving that law and how to manipulate it.
Yep, that's why it's called quantum mechanics.
That's why when a paranormal is like, well, you know, a ghost touched me and it hurt, and I tell them, and I say this a lot, like you understand, whether they want to touch you to be positive or negative, they're manipulating energy to touch you. It's not going to be pleasant, and no matter how they do it, you know. So
Ghostbusters,
yeah.
There's Bill Murray again.
Yeah, that guy, yeah. Man, keeps hitting the home runs. Well, Tony, before we close, let's talk about...
He is a big baseball fan, by the way, so...
Who, Bill Murray?
Oh, yeah. When you said keeps hitting home runs. So.
Yeah, yeah. So before we close, let's talk about... mention your book and any other platform you want to put out there to promote yourself.
Oh, and I appreciate that, Adam. You know, I wrote a book. It's at my website. The website is learnremoteviewing.net, simple, learnremoteviewing.net. The book is titled Ambassadors to the Stars. It's a great read, I feel, and I'm not being partial. There's a lot of different people that I interviewed, a lot of different situations that took on abductions, contactees, stories, short stories, the way Hollywood, we didn't even touch on that. I mean, you know, they're part of the program as well, how the media is, you know, one group wants a slow indoctrination to take place over the course of generations for this information to come out. Maybe another group wants to keep it more status quo, or we keep the same energy, same money lines, et cetera, et cetera. Not saying good or bad, but that might be a play out that's going on. I explore that along with all the different UFO stuff, my whole remote viewing trainings and out of body experiences. Some of them are there. But the main thing I have at my site right now is a course in learning basic scientific remote viewing. It'd be great for anybody who wants to learn it. It's very affordable. It's on video, but it also has one-on-one sessions with me involved as well. The people always ask me, well, okay, so I learned how to do remote viewing. I get a little bit of this done. I learned to look a little bit outside, but what am I really getting out of it? What people really get out of learning something like the scientific remote viewing is they start looking at it and they start gaining more cognitive ability. They may gain more cognitive ability. They may increase their intuition, their gut feeling, their sixth sense. They may notice more synchronicity in their lives. All these things, Adam, are already there. But this type of training that I go through, that I've been through extensively, and obviously we touched base on some of it, and what I take the student through, it's about a 12 to 15 hour course on video tape. You just go to the website and take the course. The classes are on there via PowerPoint, and you mirror the PowerPoint. I go through it step by step. It's all verbal. It's a closed caption. It has images in the PowerPoints. The student will just mirror what I put in front of them, only it'll be their verbiage and their sketches. And then I go over each target with them, what they got, what they might not have got. And then by doing this and getting into their subtle energy, they're slowing themselves down, and we always meditate and we do an SRV affirmation before to, you know, ground ourselves, protect ourselves in white light, etc. It's all there. It's extensive. But if a person wants to adventure into learning remote viewing, it would be, you know, a course that they could definitely look at. And there's definitely good byproducts to be gained by learning something like that. And I appreciate you asking me that.
No, not a problem. Do you know who Margie K is? She's part of the UNX Network. Shout out to the UNX Network, because this episode will be featured on there.
She's part of the MUFON out of Missouri, is it?
Yeah, maybe? Yeah. She's involved in remote viewing as well. You guys should really connect. I think you guys would have a good conversation on her podcast. I mean, easily.
That's funny you should say that, because I was looking at a particular conference recently, and her, you know, she was on that conference, and that's definitely a synchronicity that you just said right there. So that was interesting.
Yeah, I'm gonna connect the two of you. I think that's important. Also being said is what we said earlier about people learning and you want to learn more. Listen, it doesn't hurt you to sharpen your tool, meaning your brain. You could only develop more cognitive experience. You could become sharper cognitively when you apply yourself to it, no matter how you do it.
It's just another tool in a toolbox to expand consciousness and awareness. You know, it's helped a lot of different people out. Some people are afraid, but that's why, you know, you got to get through the mythologies of all kinds of different things. You know, it's like, I like instructing it. My history, Adam, is a personal trainer as well. You know, when I ran a fitness center for 26 years, I was a personal trainer at it as well. So I have an affinity to teach and to work with people. I don't push them too hard. I repeat things over and over. I think everybody has a different learning curve, but something like remote viewing, everybody has this innate ability. It's just a question of exercising those muscles, because they're kind of dormant. You know, it's just like the body. If you don't exercise particular areas or muscles or stretch them out, they're not as useful as they could be. Well, this is the same thing.
Well, yeah. Listen, if you don't turn on the Bluetooth, it's not going to work. You know what I mean? So
no.
it's just a reality. Like if you don't turn that portion of the computer on, you're not going to get the use of that portion of that computer. You have to learn how to do it. It's a learning exercise. Well, Tony, I had a good time talking to you tonight, man. I really enjoyed it.
I appreciate it, Adam. You are well-versed in all this, and I appreciate all the work you do with getting the guests on and letting them speak, you know, what had gone on in their lives, what turned them into the researchers or learners or experiencers or contactees, all these things. What you do is another important piece. Don't ever shortchange yourself with that, but keep it all in perspective, because we're here in 3D as well. And I appreciate you having me on. It was a lot of fun, and we probably could have talked for another hour or so. But you know what? this was good.
Yeah, we have a part two coming, by the way. So
I'm all for it if you're all for it.
Yeah, man. All right. So have a good night, Tony. We'll talk again.
Thank you much. Thank you for everybody that tuned in to listen. Thank you much.
Take care.